I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And welcome to What's Next. Today, we talk to the two principals of Eat Off Art, Alexa Wajid and Idris Wajid. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us,
truly.
I guess, you know, I actually shouldn't have said to the two principals because actually there's a third now.
Technically, there are only two founders.
Oh, yeah. Two founders, but your son is.
We have a tag along.
Yeah, your son's involved now too.
He is involved. He's definitely on his own track. He's a visual artist as well, and his whole goal is to create. Right, he's not as concerned as the business end of Eat Off Art, but yes, he's truly an artist.
Yeah, I mean, you figure he was about 14, maybe, right, when he started kind of. Like when he was 14, he started to paint on sneakers.
Yes.
Right. So okay. Given the sneaker culture is like incredibly huge, you know, with collectors and things of that nature, he started designing sneakers and that quickly. And what I mean by designing sneakers, he was customizing them, like transforming a plain white sneaker into like
a work of art.
Art.
Yes.
Art. And so that really took off, and then he started doing stuff for like the Buffalo Bills and Shaq Lawson and
the Dolphins,
Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah. And so he was making a decent money as a 15, 14, 15-year-old kid. But where he is now, 6 years later, at age 20, he doesn't want to do that anymore. Like he turns down sneaker customization.
Right.
Because he allowed himself to say no.
Yeah,
wow.
He just decided to say no. And his parents were like, what? Like, dude, like you're earning money right now. You know, this isn't. But as we spoke off record, it was like, we step out of the way and let him develop into who he is. And so now Made by Mech has been his business, like Mecca Made by Mech. But now he's evolved into like this social media star. Like now, like this has got like, what, 14,000, 15,000 followers.
Wow.
Definitely more than we do.
Yeah. Yeah. So his engagement is rich and it's all authentic. It's all authentically him.
It's interesting because, like you said, you stay out of the way and he's finding it. But it seems creative people that I've known, when you get bogged down doing one thing, though it's secure, it can be maybe a little stifling of sorts. And let's maybe talk about both of your experiences as you evolved about that. How quickly, Idris, did that come for you, would you say? Maybe it's still to come. I don't know.
Like as far as shifting?
Well, just the idea that I need to follow my creative spark rather than...
That's me following that inner navigation system has been with me my entire life.
Oh, okay.
Although, as a teenager... Like, you know, us raising our children, my mom wasn't able to afford me those luxuries of, like, taking risks and gambling on who I thought I was. Mm. So I had to kind of conform to the systems. I had to go to school, which is not a bad thing, but I went to school, completed 4 years at Buff State, hated it, graduated, did not find a job in graphic design. So I used graphic design as a way for me to freelance a little bit, but I worked wherever I could find work. But I never worked in my field that I graduated from, so... Just randomly just kind of stumbling around, but always needing to pay attention to the inner navigation. I wasn't able to really do that until 2000, 10? Like maybe 2000?
Okay. Yeah, a little before. You were doing your music for a while.
But 2008 was when I was fully
immersed
in music. Like,
yeah. You actually did a show about WBFO, right?
Oh, yeah, we
at
did.
At UB.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Allen Hall.
Allen Hall.
Yeah,
oh,
Allen Hall.
Okay.
Yeah.
A little piece of art.
With Bert Gambini.
Yeah.
Oh, with Bert. Okay,
yeah.
Very nice.
the first hip-hop artist.
Oh, all right.
To do a live performance Allen Hall.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it wasn't until I was in my 30s or so that I was able to just really silence all the voices from the past of like the worry and the fret and just really was like, okay, I have to obey like this feeling, man. And so in 2017 with the Freedom Wall was another taste of like the work that I should be doing. Like, I had the taste. So I just kept having these little tastes. And then, you know, Alexa will probably elaborate, but it wasn't until maybe 2020 or so, like, maybe, yeah. Right?
Where
it
was 2018.
2000, yeah, true, true. 2018 or so, where it was just like, this is what I'm going to do.
Sure.
This is my life's work. This is my life's practice. This is my air. This is the water that I swim in, and all in with no regrets.
How about for you, Alexa? I mean, your road's a little different for sure.
My road is different. I am the child that listened to the parents and did what she was supposed to do, even though I felt an inner pull to do something else. I, you know, got the job and figured I was going to retire and get the white picket fence. Mm-hmm. I started in hospitality management. I did a lot of stages in Switzerland and Italy. And then I left hospitality management because I knew it wasn't for me. I didn't want the hours. So I went into the technical side of project management. Mm. And I installed point of sale systems. I did domains and websites. I did everything but what I was supposed to do. And I got burned out. And I was like, okay, I got to figure out what's next. So I went into pharmaceuticals. I'm like, okay, I can do project management in pharmaceuticals. I can be me. This is where I can be myself and I can retire from. Lo and behold, they closed operations in Buffalo. And we had to make a decision of what we were going to do. And I said, okay, I'll stay here with the family and I'll go into culinary arts. I went into culinary arts and that's where I kind of got the taste of, okay, I don't need a desk job. I can be creative through food. Maybe that's enough for me. Hmm. But through everything that's happened since then, since 2014 and throughout the pandemic, I realized that I needed more. So Idris had been encouraging me for many times,
all along.
Lots of years to say, we need to do this on our own. I'm like, no, I don't know if we're ready. We need a paycheck every week. We need this. And he's like, we can do this. And again, I didn't listen. And it wasn't until the pandemic where I was forced to listen to him. And I was forced to sit myself down and I was forced to see the magic that we possessed. And the creative prowess that we had and the capability that we had and the fact that actually having a desk job was stopping us being our unique and authentic selves, right? And Eat Off Art has been a godsend in so many different ways. Yes, it's still a business.
Right.
Yes, we still work. And there's a lot of work where we're not always to be our creative selves. But we're able to do it on our terms.
Mm-hmm.
We're able to call the shots. We're able to say no. We're able to compromise where we want to. And we've also been able to allow ourselves grace, which is something that as an entrepreneur, you don't typically get because you're in this whole hustle culture
right.
of you got to do this. You got to get this sale. You got to make this money. You got to do this.
Sure.
We were in a very unique position in about 2022 when we had a tragedy in our family and literally the world had to stop.
Hmm.
And we had to give ourselves a chance to breathe and a chance to feel and a chance to grieve. And that was a very pivotal moment for Eat Off Art, but also as Alexa and Idris Wajid and the Wajid household, because it really made us understand what's important. What's necessary, having more of an appreciation for life and being able to spend time with each other. So it was definitely a pivotal point for us. And it allowed me to even be more creative and be more artistic and allow myself to just, okay, I can make mistakes. I can play around. I can have fun and I can just be my creative self, which everybody else had been telling me.
And she skipped over that part. So let me just interject here.
Please do.
Let me interject here. So Alexa's always been creative. She's always been a maker. When I met her in high school, she's the person who would know whose birthday was when, you know, whatever kind of special events they had, whatever it was that they had going on. She was hand-making cards, hand-making bracelets, hand-making things and gifting them to people in school. Like, she's one of the few people in our yearbook, if probably not the only person in our yearbook, her and one of her good friends, Daria Bird, they don't even have a photo in their yearbook page. It's all art. It's all drawings. It's all black and white drawings.
Yeah. Really?
Doesn't even have a photo. in the yearbook.
I think I'd like drawings of Brother Mighty from this year photo, that's for sure.
So, you know what I mean? So, yeah. Like, it's always that, the creative
piece. So it was there,
it was always
bursting out.
Always been there for her. And I just, you know, always had to keep reminding her, because people always looked at me as the artist, right? Like, oh, Idris. Like, yeah, that's what I'm most prominently known for, because I've always just kind of practiced that. And now we're at this space, though, where Alexa has now, we've talked about duty, right? She has the duty now to do her practice, and because it not only empowers her, but it encourages other people who are like timid about professing themselves as being creatives or being artists, right? As if somebody needs to don you with a magic wand or a knight sword to say you, no, it doesn't really work like that. You have to give yourself the permission in order to pursue it. And I think what separates those that kind of dabble in it is just the diligence and the persistence, right? And then the application of it. And what I mean by application is just like, how is your gift and your art communicating with the world? How is it helping? Who is it impacting?
Right.
Who is it inspiring? That sort of deal, as opposed to just being a gaudy, shoulders back, you know, see me type of person. And we aren't those type of people.
Right.
Like, we just use our craft as a communication tool.
Sure.
You know? That was beautiful.
It's true.
Yeah. You're good.
So you're City Honors classmates.
Yes, yeah. We are. We graduated in 92.
How about that? Wow.
We are distinguished alumni, we just found out.
I would have to say you are.
You just found this out.
Even if you didn't get the award.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Belinda Barton, who's also from City Honors, she mentioned it to me like 2 days ago. She's like, you guys are a distinguished alumni on the website. I'm like,
what?
When's the last time I went to, like, when's the last time I went to the City Honors website? So, so that was a treat. Yeah,
and that's where we met, just as friends in City Honors. He was the first person to open the door for me in freshman year.
Wow.
And we've just been best friends since then.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, a long time.
So the best friends, though, have found a studio space here in Buffalo. Yes. This is a really interesting development for EDOF Art at the Tri-Main building.
Yes. Tri-Main building, fourth floor, suite 441. And I think we're definitely entering a new stage of our business mission and mindset. Yeah.
Yeah. So one of our, say, mission tagline, what is it? So
missions.
Yeah, missions is to build a more empathetic community.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, that's like one of our slogans. So any work that aligns with that, for us to build an empathetic community, right? To make connections between individuals.
Authentic connections.
Yeah.
And relationships.
Yeah. That's kind of what drives a lot of our decision making, you know?
Empathetic. I'm really intrigued by that. So that, I mean, to set that out as a mission and put it at the center of things is fascinating. Can I derive or just ask, do you believe the community was not empathetic, lacking in empathy prior to that?
Yes.
I do.
Yes.
Okay.
And
yes,
lacking humanity.
I do.
Lacking the ability to see people as who they are.
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. Knowing, you know, getting a chance to know them without first putting up this judgmental wall.
Right.
And arts is definitely one way to break that down.
Yeah. So the things that we've always done, like, again, EDOF Art is just an iteration of all the attempts that we've made over the years, right? Mm-hmm. Over the decades. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about what does an empathetic community look like, empathetic community looks like more than just a high five at the stadium for 2 hours, right? It looks more than just a high five at the hockey arena. It looks more than just a handshake at an exhibit, right? Just passing by. The empathetic community we're talking about is seeing the humanity in the person from that day forth, not for the moment. Like, that's the difference. Like, we have empathetic moments, right? But can we have an empathetic thread that lasts? And when you see this person, you have that memory of where you saw them and when you engaged in something particularly in the arts. And then you understand that that human being is just like you in a sense, right? And you just have a humble, a humility sort of respect for them, right? Without any attachments or without any expectations, so to speak. But that's what an empathetic community looks like to us.
Let's explore that then, in the sense that, okay, now we've got the goal and you want to make your work fit inside that goal. Mm-hmm. Can we get into the specifics of how, you know, maybe things that you've taken on, maybe some things that you've decided that you didn't want to do because it didn't fall inside that?
So the full statement is artists, educators, and entrepreneurs working together to build a more empathetic community. And we do this through definitely creating and sharing our artwork, because whether it's public art or something that we happen to create at a live event or something like that, or even the food, we're bringing people together. You know, we're giving them things to think about, to ponder on, not just look at and say, oh, that's really pretty. No, you're going to actually look at this and really delve into it and understand what that means. So creating and sharing our artwork, it's also opening up our space, right? There are lots of art spaces in Buffalo, a lot of them. But our goal is to build a community within our space, right? Mm-hmm. To build a space where people of all walks of life, all communities, diverse communities, can come together, feel safe, and feel welcome, right? Okay. And then the other way that we do this is by investing in entrepreneurs. So whether you're a business or an artist that hasn't recognized that you are truly a business, we're going to do what we can through mentorship, through consulting, through programming. We're going to build you up. We're going to invest in you in different ways. We're going to listen to what you have going on and understand how we can interject or assist or just to give a little guidance. And that's what we've been doing for the past 30 years, mm-hmm. but we haven't recognized it as a business. And we struggled in the very beginning of our business understanding, okay, well, yeah, eat off art. We just do art. No, we are so much more than just art. We are consulting. We are mentoring. We are building communities. We are supporting artists. We're changing the narrative from a starving artist to a thriving artist, recognizing that there is an entrepreneurial economy that can be built up through artists. So that's definitely the physical ways that we are building this more empathetic community.
What do you think has been holding the community back?
Ooh.
I know that's a small question with lots of big answers to it. But
wow.
I appreciate that if you'd like to explore that with me.
I feel like it's just the nature of the city, and the truth of the matter is that Buffalo is a great place to be. I'm always going to say that. However, Buffalo also is the city of two tales, because it depends on who you ask, where they are in their life and whatever they're going through in Buffalo, which leads to, right, this thing about segregation. Like,
yep.
We already know that Buffalo's historically a segregated city. So when you ask, like, what's holding us back, that's what it is. It's these lines. It's these lines where people jump across for 1 minute and they form an opinion about it, and then they go back to whatever the comfort is, right? So the empathy comes from, you stay a little longer. Deal with this engagement, right? Speak to people, talk to people. And that goes for both sides, right? Whether it's the ones that are completely successful and life is peachy, to those that are struggling in day to day and don't know how they're going to have their next meal. Either way, our idea is like this harmony. We're not saying it's going to completely remedy things,
right?
But empathy and humanity are tied together. And those things to me are the pieces that are missing. To me. So if we're talking about how great Buffalo is, then let's be all about everybody, all situations, right?
All succeeding.
Right. Yeah. Like all
healthy, all, you know, dealing with these social determinants of health and overcoming them, right? Dealing with food insecurity, dealing with, you know, not having walkable sidewalks. You know, these are all part of things that kind of keep Buffalo behind.
Right.
Right. And it bubbles up to greater things that we just don't talk about.
Right.
It's like, oh, well, that's just you all. That's your neighborhood. I'm fine. Right. So we hope to really kind of.
It's tough, man. It's on my heart to. I'm like, just an example of that is May 14th, right?
Sure.
That same night, there was a concert. Right? Wasn't it? I think it was the same night.
Same night. Well, one concert got canceled. One concert.
I thought
continued,
it was the same night, though.
But that weekend, there were, you know, Porch Fest went on.
No, Porch Fest is the next weekend. Yep. Yeah.
And I'm not saying all things had to stop, but I'm saying that.
This was the largest tragedy in the history of Buffalo.
Oh my God,
that's what
yes.
I'm saying. I'm
yes,
like, so
recognize
when we
that.
Talk about what's separating us, that's one of those moments. Like, there should have been the most empathetic pour out at that moment to pause whatever delightful engagement of, this is great town. I'm going to go out and, like, there's an entire community over on the east side, right? And it expanded more to just
on
the east side.
Understood,
but particularly, right? That was our moment to be together
yes.
as a city. That was our moment. how can I assist?
Authentically.
That's what I mean. Yes. Like authentically, right. That's the empathy yes. that we're talking about. Like yes. we're not saying discard all of your treasures.
Right.
Right. But empathy doesn't cost you anything. Right. Empathy checks your humanity, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing up May 14th. We've talked about it a lot in this program. From your perspective, then, any improvement? Has anything positive come out of this tragedy?
I think the positive is the exposure. Like, what I'm saying is positive in the sense of, right, there's Buffalo is the city of no illusions. That's a tagline.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
That's one of our taglines.
Say tagline. Yes,
okay.
Yes.
So considering that no longer enables the illusion.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean. Like yeah. it's uncovered. Like we
so
have had a serious problem here for a long, mm-hmm. long, long time.
Yeah.
Now there's no covering this anymore.
Gotcha.
And we have to
so
deal with it.
So that's what I mean as a positive. So sure. now it's present. You've been having symptoms and now you've been diagnosed. You've been diagnosed. Now is the positive. Like, how do we treat this?
Right.
How do we heal?
The patient is very ill. How do we
yes.
make the patient
so
help?
So it's not, that's, I wish I had a more bedazzled answer, right? Like
no.
with sparkles, but that's the positive is like for those that wanted to turn and keep their blinders on, that's not even in the conversation anymore. It's exposed
right.
of what we're all dealing with or what we all should be facing because there's only some of us that are actually dealing with it, right?
Yeah.
And so now I think it's just the duty. We talk about duty, right? It's, in my opinion, it is your duty and your humanity to understand that this beautiful place that we live in, we all have to contribute and we have to be more mindful in general of the others, right? Because there's generations that will be affected by what happened. Mm-hmm. Generations, right? That were already impacted prior. We need to be mindful of that and what that looks like.
I agree with that. The image that comes into my mind, you're asking if anything has changed. It's been 2 years and just what, yesterday or 2 days ago, there were 3 fires in Buffalo.
Right.
But you only really heard about 1.5, right? The old pink was the biggest conversation, yep. whether it was on social media or the news, people crying and, oh, my childhood was here. My 20s was here. This is where I got a great steak sandwich, right? And yes, it's horrible that that happened, right? And it was torn down immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You have the cobblestone fire, 2 buildings that were vacant. Oh, this is horrible. This is horrible. And let's preserve them. Right? Should we preserve them? But then you have this 3rd fire that no one has talked about that happened on the east side of Buffalo that displaced, I think, 3 families and a business, right? I think there was also another one that there was a barbershop in. But the point is, this is where we talk about the segregation. This is where we talk about not having the humanity and the empathy and really checking where our priorities are, where our heart lies, just where our kindness lies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's really what it comes down to. And that's a perfect example. And there have been so many since May 14th and prior that you have to stop and take a look at your lens and see what point of view you're actually viewing this from, you know, and where your heart is and what your, again, what your duty is.
And may I add to, I mean, again, another, our other tagline is a city of good neighbors, right?
Yes.
I challenge all of our Buffalo residents to be good neighbors as well during the good times.
Yes.
Like during our tragedies is usually when like the good neighbors thing kind of, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
During our sports losses, athletic events, our loss, like we come together as a community, you know, for even that, the blizzard.
Especially
like,
when there are cameras involved.
Yeah. But so what I'm just saying, like, if that's what we stand on, can we demonstrate that all of the time?
Simple. It seems like a simple ask.
That's all that I'm saying. Like,
right.
Can we demonstrate that all of the time? Can you be compassionate? Like, good neighbor, can you be compassionate? Like, what if it's that?
You watch out for your neighbor? Can
yes.
you engage with your neighbor?
Yes.
All the time.
Yeah.
yeah. And your neighbor is not just the person that lives next to you.
Yeah.
It's the person that you work with.
Yeah.
It's literally the person walking down the street next to you.
The person you skip in line.
Yes. Exactly.
Cut off in traffic.
Yes. It's the person you cut off in driving there. Can we be good neighbors?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And I'm not, you know, and again, this isn't a utopia kind of ideal. Like, you know, people are like, oh, that's unrealistic. Yeah, it is in a sense.
But it goes to make a metaphor of sorts, and I'll use an athletic metaphor, but, you know, the team isn't going to be fully great until all team members are playing to their potential.
Absolutely.
Yes,
that right
that's
there.
A great analogy. Yes, yes, yes. Because we want Buffalo to win.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, however you want to take that. Like, we want Buffalo to win.
Yeah.
Now, my challenge, though, is that some people think it's winning.
Hmm. Right. Right. No doubt.
Some people think it's winning. Like,
it's to take it, the City of Good Neighbors moniker.
Yes.
I mean, it's a nice thing to say, and we all want to believe it, and we'll highlight the things that we do that are good neighbor things, but there's more to it than about being a good neighbor, right?
You know? I don't want to sound pessimistic, but it's just like, no, we have to really put a checks on these things, man. We have to. Like, we could be doing so much better.
Certainly.
There's no doubt about it. I think.
Yeah, so there we go. Right. Another great tagline.
Yeah. I just always believe. I mean, which is why we're still here. Like, we could be.
We have thought about leaving.
I'm sure.
Talked about leaving. But it's just something about Buffalo that is like, no, we have to be here. We have to see some things through, right? We have to share who we are so we can hopefully inspire others. So we can leave this legacy of, okay, empathetic community.
You know, I had the poet 10,000 in here the other day. And we were talking. Yes. And the one thing, and we talked about the East Side, and I asked him, what makes it special? And he goes, we show up. And it sounds like that's what you've decided to do.
Yeah.
Like you said, I mean, creative people have opportunities in lots of other cities to go, you know, but to stay here, to continue to show up is a big part of it.
It's a challenge because it's almost like being in a relationship, right? It's a relationship. So what I mean by that is like people can overstay a relationship because they see the potential in the person. It's like, I just see so much in you. But that person just doesn't have the wherewithal to make the adjustment, right? And that's how it feels sometimes. Like, we have invested our life's work here in Buffalo, and we could be someplace else. Yeah. But we really believe that it can be just, again, a more empathetic community for all, right? And Buffalo has a history, as you know, of being the first in many things. Innovation, right? Like, it's always been a thing in Buffalo, being the first city of light, like electricity, air conditioners, right? Considering we had 90 degrees last night, right? Right? Like, all these things. And it's like, other cities have flourished because they looked at what Buffalo was doing many, many years ago.
Sure.
Yes.
I just believe that we can become that place again, because now people are looking at Buffalo as what not to do sometimes, right? So I would love for us to be on the forefront of, this is the conditions of the city now, over a 5-10 year period. These are the things that we made to adjust, and look at how the city is growing. Look how it's truly flourishing, right? All the way from the white collar to the artist or to the blue collar, whatever terms you want to use.
Yes.
That's just the ideal that I see. But I know there's only so much that we can do, and that's all that we're doing is everything that we can.
We're talking with Idris Wajid and Alexa Wajid of Eat Off Art. Let's get back to the things that Eat Off Art is trying to do to build that empathetic community. I appreciate the kind of divergence into a long conversation there, but I think it's always important to have those conversations when the moment comes. But let's talk about some of the programming that you are doing that are trying to follow just that mission of building a more empathetic community.
Well, the first thing that we're doing is we're working with local artists. We're ensuring or finding ways that we can bring them into our fold. So we have created a collective of artists. So if we have projects going on, we share those projects with other artists. If we can't do something, we pass it on to another artist. We have Art for Healing classes. We have a program that we started through our nonprofit called New Masters Healing Buffalo Through the Arts. We're working with local artists again with grants and funding in order to provide community programs that are focused on visual arts and literary arts, theater, ceramic arts, multidisciplinary arts.
Did you mention fashion?
No, and fashion construction.
Okay.
Right? So these programs that we're building, we're not just providing, you know, the instruction, right? we want to also provide tools to each participant that comes to these classes.
And what's a tool?
And the tools, what do tools are look like? Whatever they're learning in the class on, whether it's a sewing machine, whether it's paint and paintbrushes, whether it's a voice recorder, anything that they're using in the class, they're able to take each of those supplies, their own set, home with them. So they can continue their arts practice and their expression and what they need to do to continue, right? Because many arts programs like, oh yeah, come and learn how to blow glass or make mosaic arts. But when you get home, what are you supposed to do?
You got to wait until the next opportunity.
You got to wait until the next class that you got to pay for. Instead of at 2 o'clock in the morning when the inspiration hits, go do that thing, right? And go be expressive.
So that was an important part of like our programming and
development. So you planned for that in advance.
We had to fight for that.
Yeah. Okay.
And we're still fighting for more funding because people are not, even the grantors are not seeing the value
in art or artists.
Right.
They'll say, oh, well, you're just doing an art class. We are doing so much more than just an art class. Right. You know, we're providing a space that people can create their own comfort in, right? To express themselves, to deal with some traumatic events, to deal with grief. We've had people that cry in our classes because we've unlocked or opened something in them that they haven't been able to open themselves. We're giving them independence. We're empowering them with tools that help with their own expression. We are changing the course of some people's lives. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, as artists, we are healing something within ourselves. And we are opening ourselves up to allow people to talk to us and investigate what we're doing and how we do it and why it's important to us and how those things can be important and meaningful to them. So these programs are really important for us to continue because we're sometimes on two sides of the fence where Drew's like, I don't want to do that. It's too much trouble. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, it is, but we're doing it for a reason.
Okay.
We're doing it for more than just ourselves. We're doing it for the next generation of artists who are coming behind us that want a space where they can eat off art, right? Where they can heal from art, where they can be themselves with art and not apologize for their creativity or their uniqueness or their weirdness, right? Just to be who you are.
Yeah. Alexa faces the resistance. She faces the resistance, which I admire her for. Like I said, we don't always agree on everything. She sees the long view sometimes. Sometimes I see the long view, right? Depends. It just depends. We kind of yin and yang off each other in that manner. But to that point, like where the resistance is where the unlocking is for more to follow, like for more people to open the gate, right? It's like the putting your foot in the door that's being slammed, right? And it's like,
no, right.
So it's kind of like that deal. Like we're trying, because we haven't seen anybody prior to us be able to hold doors open for us.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because you know, probably when you were growing up or going through City Honors, probably other artistic people or artistic inclinations who probably, for whatever reason, you know, they stopped on the path, right?
No question.
This wasn't there for them.
No question.
It wasn't there or accessible to them.
Right.
Right? Because we stand on the shoulders of many ancestors and elders that have allowed us to be where we are today, right? Living and deceased. But specifically in the Black community, one, it's very difficult to find someone who can have art as a full-time job because that was just not anything that's possible. It's unrealistic. That's a hobby. You're not going to make money from that.
Right.
But to have two people in one household, a married couple, to both be full-time artists, providing for their family, two creative children, who are also being something to their own community and other communities.
Yeah, they're inspiring their peers.
Right. So, and again, that's our duty. Many people see things or comment about things that we do that we don't even acknowledge, consider, understand.
Yeah.
Because we're doing what we know we are here to do. Right.
I'm just curious. You intrigued me. Naysayers or doubters?
No, they're supporters that want us to do more, want us to literally just be who we are. And like, we're like, well, we're just doing what we do.
Yeah, somebody would say, like, thank you for whatever the post was or whatever.
Oh,
like,
I see.
Thank you for such and such. It meant something. I'm like, and we were like, We were trying to recall, what did we do?
What happened?
And it was as simple as Alexa and I used to have these conversations in our house, especially when COVID hit. We were just broadcasting from our couch. And it was a way for us to just stay engaged with the community and for us not to, you know, kind of lose lose hope, you know.
And
so during those conversations, we're just super vulnerable. Vulnerability is a part of art, number one.
Right.
Because when you create something and you share it and you have to endure whatever the reception is to whatever you create, that's the vulnerability. That's factored in. You can't want success in it and not want the vulnerability part. Yep. So we always share our vulnerability in our conversations between she and I, just like, we don't know what we're doing, or this is happening. I have no idea who we're going to eat. Like, we have these conversations. So people have commented on that. Like,
gotcha.
Oh my good, thank you. It inspired me to do this and blah, blah, blah. And we didn't see the value in it because we were like, we're just telling our story.
Right.
Right. But now we accept that, again, it's one of those things about being receptive. What do people need?
Mm-hmm.
What helps people? Okay, cool. We sit down and talk for 10 minutes. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but from what we hear, it's going to help somebody.
Okay.
Right.
We
so we just obligate to not obligate like, oh, like that kind of obligation, but obligated like, no, we got to keep doing this.
Yeah. Gotcha.
We got to keep
going.
Yeah.
Vulnerability in art. That's a key thing.
It is.
A lot of people can't get over that.
Nope.
It's hard. It's very difficult to be vulnerable. I struggle with it. Right. Dries is the most authentically vulnerable person that I know. He literally puts everything out there, right? He puts his wins, he puts his losses, he puts his pains. He can communicate so well when he's describing the pain that he's in that it becomes funny and inspirational and something that, that you're just like magnetized by. And for me, it's like, that's what I aspire to, right? I'm still understanding what that vulnerability is because I'm still struggling with those voices that were in my past saying, you can't, this is how you need to do it, right? So vulnerability is huge when it comes to arts.
Yeah.
And the people that have excelled or the people that have been able to create authentically and responsibly and with their duty, they're very vulnerable.
Yeah. Well, they're amazing. You have a job to do. I mean, as an artist, I think you just have a job to do. It's a vocation, right? And whatever comes along with it is what you have to accept. So Alexa and I have to check ourselves often. Like when things are going great or when things aren't as great, we have to check ourselves and we go, we asked for. Like, you know what I mean? Like, who put us here? We put ourselves here. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
For all of it, right? And that's a part of it, too. Like, you have to take all of it, man. You can't parse out what you want.
Right. So when people come to classes, I mean, are you seeing that? And are you finding ways to help them navigate through that part
of
it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One of the ways that we do that is one early introduction. We say the one rule is that you have to abandon judgment. That's our first rule, abandon judgment. They all kind of sit there like,
what is this?
They already start judging before they even create anything.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Right? Before we even give them any art supplies, I'm like, we know where you're coming from. We've been there. Mm-hmm. This is regular. Like, you have to push past that judgment, right? Because we judge ourselves pretty regularly. And another thing that we always say is you get good at whatever you practice. Mm-hmm. We just always share that with you. You get good at whatever you practice.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've been in the practice of judging yourself all the time, you're really, really good at it, which means you got to practice the other way of bypassing your judgment, however uncomfortable that feels. So in the moments where we do our instruction for the class, we tell them also, you're not here for us to teach you how to draw like us.
Mm-mm.
Like, people come and they think that we're going to give them an art lesson. Like, nope.
That's not what
we're here. This art practice is you investigating yourself without judgment.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
And we've had at least 4 or 5 instances with our classes, which is focused on visual arts, where people come in and they are so resistant. They don't even want to do the mindfulness exercises that we begin with. And then by the end of the class, they've discovered that they are actually artists.
Incredible.
They haven't painted before. They haven't drawn before. But they create things that are fully composed. The color is balanced. You know exactly what it is.
We've seen some incredible, yes.
Amazing.
Your face is exactly our face. We're like, you've never painted before. They're like, never. Like, you've never drawn. No. Like, very incredible. Beyond novice beyond almost intermediate level of drawing for some people.
And this is young and old people.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that in itself is like...
And so mindfulness, there's a mindfulness element to
that? Absolutely. You have to be mindful and present to create.
Maybe that's a block here. Explain exactly, you know, how you go about that. I mean, obviously, you got to be there to truly experience it, but give an overview, I guess.
The simplest thing is, and I'm actually going to do this while we're on, while we're on the radio. So, which hand do you typically write with, Jay?
My right hand.
Your right hand. You're right-handed. So, take your other hand, which is your left hand.
Yes.
Put your pen in it.
Gotcha.
Write your name.
I'll do the best I can.
You're doing it. Okay, I see a J.
You got a J.
I say a Y.
Yep.
M-O-R-A-N.
Not too bad. Now, okay. I will say that I used to practice that when I was a kid. I was bored and not paying attention in class, I'd use my left hand.
Flip it up, good. So that's one of the simple mindfulness practices that we do. We usually do it for a lot longer.
Okay.
Like we do a lot longer. Then we have them work with their left hand for probably 30 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, at least 25 minutes. Yeah. 25 to 30 minutes.
All right. So all of the exercises are done with their, we call it the less dominant hand. We don't use the word weak. Mm-hmm. It's like you think weak. Sure. We can, you're like, oh, you're already auto-suggesting.
Judgment in there, right?
Yeah. You're already just, so it's like lose your less dominant hand. It's less dominant because you don't use it as much. That's a 30-minute practice right there. And people start to see, I'm like, okay, so what's the criteria? And we walk around, we read their name, just like we read yours, Jay Moran, you know, Alexa Wadget. And they go, I'm like, yeah, so you've accomplished
the task.
It's legible. So you've already shown yourself that you can complete and do something that you, before you started, that you thought you couldn't do. Hmm. So little exercises like that lead into abandoning the judgment, because you have to give yourself grace in order to allow yourself to create with your left hand, right? Because you're like, oh, this isn't so bad. Like literally people say, oh, this isn't so bad. Right?
Right.
And then they use it with the dominant hand, and then they already have grace because they're like, oh, this is the kind of grace I need to have with myself in doing this exercise. That's our way to...
Interesting.
And these exercises also slow people down, right? They realize that, oh, I really had to pay attention to what I was doing.
Right.
I had to focus on what I was doing. I wasn't thinking about all this other stuff. When people are in our classes, they're not on their phones. They're not having conversations, which kind of sometimes make us feel, you know, uncomfortable. It's like, they're not talking. Should they be talking? But we're like, no, they're in their space.
Yeah.
They're doing what they need to do. We had a man in there. I think he was in his 70s. He came to the class because his wife forced him to.
Dragged.
And he came in the class. His hands were in his pocket. You could tell that he was not happy to be there. By the time the class was over, his face was bright. He had made in this amazing portrait. And you could just feel that he was lighter. And he came over to us and he was like, thank you. Thank you. This is the best I've felt in a while. I haven't picked up a brush in 60 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Transformative.
Yeah, and his wife was kind of looking at him like,
who are you?
Yeah, she was, wife was looking at him like, wow. You know? Yeah,
it was. So art is so important, but it's something that's taken out of schools. It's taken out of programs.
Right.
Yeah. You know, but art is like
science, there's math. And there's such a larger value than is often given.
Yes. Yeah.
So if somebody, I mean, the website's the best way to find out a little bit more.
Yep.
Eatoffart.com. EATOFFART.
.com. And it's on all of our socials, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook. You know, we have some merchandise. We have a wellness activity book, resource book called Modes of Healing that we put together with about 7 other artists, where we are combining all different types of exercises, journal prompts, zine making, coloring pages,
poetry,
mental health resources, and things like that.
It's a free
resource book that you can get right in our studio at TriMaine. We're still doing public art.
The
community, we're still doing a lot of that, so you'll be seeing that during the season as well.
Well, when you were talking about how you guys came about, you know, on the shoulders of previous people, we need to really talk about the Freedom Wall, which in so many ways, I mean, talk about transformative, right? And maybe in some ways for you, Idris, transformative for you as well. Yeah. You know, we were talking about the story before you went on there, but I think it's worth maybe kind of exploring it just a little bit, or at least repeat elements of it, how it all even came to be. Because originally, you weren't even going to be involved in it.
No. So originally, at that particular time, I was working with a nonprofit organization in the community.
Sure.
And I was still just kind of drawing regularly. And just at that time, I went through this exercise where I was drawing for 700 days straight.
Okay.
Right. But the origin of that was I hadn't drawn for about 6 years.
Because he was teaching visual arts.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
I was a visual arts teacher at a high school, which was just a very challenging time for me at that time. So for 6 years of teaching, I wasn't creating. Around 2016, I just started drawing every day based off of a friend of mine who challenged me, just like, draw every day. I haven't seen you draw, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. That led to me drawing every day, just putting it out, not even thinking about it. No judgment again.
Yep.
That put me on the radar of the Buffalo AKG, then the Albright Knox, which was great. I didn't know who was watching. I had no idea. It wasn't for that intention. And so the Freedom Wall had already kind of been rolling out. You know, they planned these things years in advance. And as it rolled out, originally there was only one artist, who was Chuck Tingley, and phenomenal. Like, he probably has the largest number of public art murals in Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
Independently or with institutions. He's an incredible artist. Like, absolutely incredible. And so originally when they rolled it out, it was only Chuck who was supposed to be responsible for painting 28 portraits along the Freedom Wall. Once it was rolled out and released in the newspaper, things of that nature, the community took arms and kind of was like, wait a minute, like, you haven't had a conversation with the community about what you're about to install in the community, right? Rightfully so. So as Alexa mentioned before we started rolling, was like at the time the Albright, Buffalo AKG now.
Sure. No, it doesn't exactly roll off.
I want to make sure.
We'll get there.
I want to make sure I keep with your branding, respect your branding.
Yeah, me too.
So they had an option. As a large historic institution, they had the option to put blinders on, continue project, move on, or hold up, engage.
Yep.
They chose to engage.
Which was beautiful.
It really was. So when we talk also about those empathetic moments, when we talked about empathy, that was one of those moments. We got this wrong? Really? Let's talk. What did we do wrong? And they got laced with everything that they did wrong. They were informed all about everything they did wrong. But the beauty of it was that was one of those moments, those corrective moments in history where an institution, in my opinion, got it right, right? And how did they get it right? They went and had conversation. The humanity, again, it's a simple thing. It's a simple, is it scary? Yes. In regards to you doing something wrong, you're going to be lashed out at, blah, blah, blah. Yes, but you invited that. That's where we are.
Yeah.
So all that to say is a committee formed around what the community kind of just triaging or whatever, however you want to put it, about what the community wanted. Then that community also brought in other artists. That's how I was brought in.
Gotcha.
Right? You don't have Idris Wajid. You don't have John Baker. You don't have a woman. You don't have a woman. Let's go there, right? Julia Bottoms. So now we assemble this team, and each one of us are skilled in a particular way in order to do this. So each of us had seven each. And it goes pretty much 1, 2, 3, 4. Like, it just alternates all the way, kind of like a harmony, right? So Aaron and his team thought about, like, what does it look like if it's just the first seven artists is all one style, the next seven is all one style, right? That didn't seem to work. So they went through this, you know, just the 1, 2, 3, 4, right? Julia, Chuck, John, me, whatever. And so, again, that was just a very rich moment, you know? And I said yes when the offer came, but I was a...
He didn't want to say yes. His mouth said yes before his brain caught up.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's true. It's true. I think Alexa might have been looking at me when I was on the phone with him, just like, what? Like, what are they saying? Just say yes, yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. You want it. And I didn't think I was ready.
I put him in those situations a lot.
Yeah, I didn't think I was ready. Was I skilled enough? Yes, but I didn't think I was ready. And so I said yes. And so to your point about transformative for not only for the community, but transformative for myself, yes. Because when I said earlier that I had a taste of that inner navigation of what I thought I should be doing, I cried at that wall several times. Cried at that wall several times because I realized that, one, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is the moment that I wanted, and I almost said no to it because of my judgment of myself and my self-doubt. Secondly, I realized, what was I so afraid of when the people that I'm painting on this wall gave their lives for human rights? They put their lives on the line. Now, here I am as a father, married with children. Dr. Martin Luther King, married with children. Malcolm X, married with children. They put their lives on the line. And what am I doing at the wall? I'm just painting. Perspective.
Right.
Was what I doing kind of life-changing? Yes, for me, right? And for like generations that may come and engage with the wall, yes. But that's what the transformative part for me was like, Idris, you can do this. And, nice. And you must. The same way that they didn't choose themselves to do the work. Those 28 people on the work, they didn't necessarily choose themselves. They just accepted, like, somebody's got to do it. And so that's where I am now as an artist, and that's where we are. Like, somebody has to do it.
Right. And just one other project that I don't think all the details are put together yet, but you're going to be involved in an event in Lewiston. Rhythm and Roots.
Oh,
yes,
yeah.
Yes.
I'm interested in this.
Yeah.
This is
it's interesting, right? So you talk about, you know, what do you see that needs to be changed in the world? What is it that's happening that, you know, where people are not representative? Justin DeLuca is the visionary of this event. And Mike Crudo? I can't remember his last name, but he owns Gallo Restaurant up in Lewiston. But they had this notion of, yeah, there's a jazz festival that comes every year,
yep.
Right? But who's represented in that audience? What's missing, right? So they were like, you know what? We really love reggae. It's huge. We want young people to have something to be excited about in Lewiston. Lewiston is a beautiful venue, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So they were like, we're going to do this festival called Rhythm and Roots. And he just had the vision. He didn't have all the pieces. He didn't have the sponsors. He didn't have the artists. He just knew this is what he wanted to do.
Hmm.
Right? And
we were pulled in by John.
John D'Angelo, who's a graphic designer in Buffalo.
Wizard. He's a wizard.
He is.
He's also a visionary. So yes. I want to shout him out. So he brought us in because he felt like we'd be able to collaborate, right, for a vision of what the arts piece may look like, arts engagement, right? The art engagement is usually it's kind of like a ticket in a sense, right? It's like a ticket. You're there. You kind of experience something to connect the dot with. You were there watching the music, but you also had this art experience where you either left an artifact behind or you took an artifact with you, right? Because usually if you're talking about concerts in general, unless you're buying like a T-shirt or some sort of mug or something by that artist, you only leave with the experience of this song, right? But nowadays, everybody records on their phone, things of that nature, right? But this arts engagement is meant for just to make another connection of the experience, right? So that's what we're there to kind of create.
So in addition to the food, in addition to the DJs that'll be represented there, they're going to have a reggae band. The headliner are Skatalites. Which is a well-known reggae band. They are also going to have the arts engagement piece, which we're kind of spearheading, where we have about 3 artists that are going to be painting live, but we also want to have an interactive piece to the arts engagement where people can come and partake probably in some chalk drawings
leave
on
a mark.
The wall,
mm-hmm.
leave their own mark, have their own experience.
Hmm.
So it's really exciting. So it's something brand new.
It must feel like it's got to be an affirming element of your mission, right?
To
a certain extent, right? That you're finding your way into a new portion of the community.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is. Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. We are going to go and do things that we can measure impact, right? Like we can sort of measure impact, we can measure response, right? Those sorts of deals. So, like us not really having any connection in Lewiston, so to speak, we're able to go there and kind of gauge. Okay, how receptive was that activity, right? And then you start to see, okay, what more needs to happen? Like, we don't live in Lewiston, but as Western New Yorkers, right? People, you travel anywhere.
Sure. Right, you can go anywhere you want.
Right, you go.
20 to 40 minutes, you know, can get anywhere you want.
Yeah, so there's an arts community and there's a music community there. So that, to me, is like the passport. You know, for us to kind of be there, and we'll see how it goes, man.
Yeah.
And we're always thankful to the people that see us and recognize us and, you know, speak our names in rooms and buildings that we're not even a part of or in. So we're very thankful for our community that has always supported us through all of our endeavors and people that have always championed us. and just allowed us to truly be our authentic selves.
You know what we should do is we should have you back in at a certain time and we'll start looking at some of those impacts. How does that sound?
Hey,
huh?
Hey,
huh? Hey. Well, yeah. Well, yeah. We'll get them.
Ooh, vulnerable moment here.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate the conversation. It went a lot of different places, and I appreciate, again, the honesty and the perspective.
Thank you
for
so
your
much,
time.
Jay.
Thank you for having
this
us.
It was lovely.
It was great having you. Alexa Wajid and Idrissa Wajid from Eat Off Art. This has been What's Next on WBFO.